This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you are listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar in studio with Roshan Gunnison and Noel Lim.
Let's also come back to some issues here. Unemployment, that is really a big thing here. So according to the Department of Statistics Labour Force Survey, Malaysia's unemployment rate climbed to 4.8% for the month of June after four consecutive months of declines with a total of 768,700 unemployed persons in the country. And just for context, Malaysia reported an unemployment rate of 4.5% in May, which is lower than June. And just to tell you even further back, in February last year, before the MCO kicked in, Malaysia's unemployment rate was only 3.3%.
Yeah, and if I remember the stats correctly, in the last 3 months, that active unemployed increased significantly as well. Now, the survey also notes that all sectors registered declines in employment, led by services sector, which posted its first decline in 12 months. Now, by the state, the highest unemployment rate is in the quarter was in Labuan with 8.8%, then Sabah, Perlis, Kelantan and Selangor with 4.4%.
So what do these numbers tell us about the economic situation of the country amidst the ongoing lockdown? And will we see unemployment numbers continue to rise? For more on this, we have on the line with us Dr. Melati Nungsari, Assistant Professor of Economics at the Asia School of Business and a research affiliate at MIT Sloan School of Management. Good morning, Melati. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Let's take a look at the numbers. So according to DOSUM, the country's unemployment rate climbed to 4.8%, up from 4.5% the previous month, with all sectors impacting registering declines. What's your takeaway from these numbers?
So I think the numbers reflect kind of what we already know, that this pandemic is unusual and very catastrophic in the scale of its economic disruptions and destruction. So in many ways, it's not really surprising. Malaysia has imposed one of the most strict set of restrictions on its people compared to other countries in the region, but our cases and deaths per capita are also amongst the highest. So I think uncontrolled spread of the virus has resulted in both deaths of people and various facets of the economy. So these numbers that you brought up, I think although very sobering, are quite the reality. And I'd also like to point out some other worrying indicators. So we know that wages have also been rapidly declining. The Department of Statistics a while back released that median wages in Malaysia fell by double digits, I think about 16% in 2020. And we're also seeing an undoing of economic mobility as middle-class families are also sliding down the income distribution. We also know that underemployment has increased, so both time-related underemployment, meaning people who are working less than 30 hours a week, and skill-related unemployment, so basically people with degrees placed at low or medium-skilled jobs. And this number is huge. I mean, I think it's about 1.85 million in Malaysia right now. So the indicators are all not looking very good.
You know, I can't help but think, during the Asian financial crisis, there was a lot of implications on the employment market. And right now in this crisis, what are the implications of underemployment and also fresh graduates being underemployed? They are not employed for what their degree trained them to do.
So I think there's a couple of reasons reasons for this and also reasons to worry, I guess. The first thing I think is, times are tough. So people take jobs, maybe short-term odd jobs. I know many have moved into the gig economy, maybe taking jobs that are below their qualifications. But I think in the long term, our biggest concern is whether or not they will be able to leave these jobs. For those who joined a gig economy, will they be able to actually get full employment? We know that the gig economy provides sort of short-term opportunities for livelihoods, but it's certainly not a long-term solution for unemployment. There's no career progression, no social support, meaningful social support in any way. So really the long-term issue is start thinking about how to eventually move the high-skilled labor into high-skilled jobs, how to create those jobs. And we, for higher education in particular, because I'm in higher ed, we really need to think about the issue of, if our degrees are not producing the ability to gain meaningful jobs, then we need to take a serious look at this mismatch, which has always existed, but I think it's sort of worse now.
Now, Melati, when we take a look at the current situation, which demographic do you think will have more difficulty getting a job when the recovery starts to set in?
So I think with regards to that, it will depend on many factors. So, for example, some of the questions are, you know, which sectors will recover first? Are we going to be able to vaccinate everybody in time? Will supply be enough? So I don't think I can say sort of exactly who will be impacted, but I do know for sure that a lot of jobs that are lost are not coming back. So let me just give you one example. So with tourism, I think for a long time, a lot of our higher education has focused on placing people in the tourism industry. We have a lot of hospitality programs, pastry, cooking, aviation even. And are all of those jobs coming back? I don't think they are. We've been hit so hard with COVID that I think it's going to take a significant amount to revitalize the tourism industry. And, we have to deal with quarantining visitors, checking vaccination statuses, coordination worldwide. So I think the tourism sector, for example, is one sector where I don't see a lot of jobs coming back. So for policymakers, this will mean, the need to reskill and upskill a significant portion of our labor force, which is going to be a very daunting task.
And Melati, what do you think the government should be doing then in this short term to address the rising unemployment numbers, and especially, I guess, graduate unemployment? Is it a matter of having to just wait it out until the pandemic situation improves?
So I think the best thing that the government did for businesses through its stimulus packages recently was the wage subsidy program. So basically, government paying companies to retain people on their payroll. It was effective. It was expanded, actually, in the last stimulus package, but it was likely not enough. So I think there has been concerns that the government's fiscal policies just have not been generous enough, have not covered enough households and businesses, and not for enough time. So I think in the short term, if possible, fiscal policies should be expanded to allow for a more comprehensive wage subsidy program, which hopefully will help with the unemployment rate somewhat. But I think, in the absence of that, so either the government pumps more money into trying to keep employers afloat, or it really has to slowly allow companies to open up. And when I say slowly, I think it has to be pretty much very much, science-based. So vaccinations for workers, particularly in high-risk industries, have to be accelerated and completed soon. Ventilation, which we know is a key factor in reducing the spread, has to be a priority. Testing needs to be much more affordable than what it is right now. It's currently incredibly unaffordable. I think the RTK tests are about, 39 ringgit. It needs to be probably below 15 ringgit for it to make sense for businesses to regularly test. And so, after the government deals with all of that, it has to then ensure the healthcare system can cope if workers start getting sick. So I think there's sort of a lot of issues with trying to restart that maybe we need to plan a bit more on. And we really do not want to find ourselves in a situation which is going to be very like sort of a death blow to businesses where we have yet another outbreak and have to close again, right after opening up.
How long do you think employment rate could, go back to a pre-pandemic level, given that SMEs are badly affected and they're the biggest group of employers?
I think it's going to be probably more than a year. I'm very pessimistic with this stuff. But I think that the key indicator to watch is not only unemployment, because as we see, underemployment is going to be a huge issue. So, are graduates actually getting jobs that require degrees, or are people just, taking food delivery jobs, which is not optimal, right? So I think what we need to watch is both underemployment, which I think will be quite high in the next months and probably over a year or so. It's going to be a long, bumpy recovery, I think, from Malaysia.
And Melati, may we take, what do you think could be the long-term impact here of this on the economy?
So I think one thing that people haven't spoken about very much is children. So our children have been out of school for a year and a half. It's unlikely that they can safely return to school in many parts of the country even this year. And so by the end of this, it could be, 2.5 years since they've seen the inside of a classroom. And so we know that, this loss of learning has huge impacts on everybody, but it disproportionately impacts kids from poor families the most. And so, what does this mean, right? So I was recently watching this webinar with the finance minister in Indonesia, and a statistic that they were flouting about was, 1 year less of schooling translates to 8% less in lifetime earnings. So imagine that for us, right? So we're not used to thinking about children as sort of future workers, but in many ways they are. There are investments in our future economy. So when we have issues with them returning to the classroom, this will end up translating to, worse long-term economic outcomes. And I think we're also likely to see a widening in the income distribution. We are likely to see the erosion of the middle class. We know the middle class has already lost a significant portion of their income based on statistics from last year. So I think, you know, dealing with policies, targeted policies to sort of help uplift the middle class again will have to be a big consideration moving forward.
Now, Malathi, unemployment or underemployment are not new scenarios, right? These are things that we've been talking about for ages. The government has always been talking about it and saying that we're going to upskill and all of this. What do you think are the biggest misconceptions that we have when it comes to unemployment and underemployment in Malaysia?
So I think with the gig economy, I think one thing that I often hear about is, you know, it's a great thing from for many people. You know, it allows flexibility, it allows you to be your own boss, it allows you to make money when you need to. And I think all of those things are true. But like I mentioned before, I think, you know, if a large portion of our workforce is actually employed in the gig economy, and we're not talking about sort of like, you know, quick tech jobs where you make a lot of money by doing one hour of work. We're talking about, you know, sort of lower skilled gig economy work. If a significant portion of the labor force is employed in these jobs, it's going to be very difficult to try and uplift wages in Malaysia, which we know is also a big issue. It's going to be hard for the personal progress, right? So career progress. And although we've been seeing, you know, slight changes in increasing social support for workers in this economy, there's still much to do. So I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that this is sort of a plug in the bathtub that will be able to prevent things forever, but that's not true. So we need to figure out how to move, again, these people back into high-skilled or, you know, higher-skilled full-time employment.
Malathi, thank you so much for your comments. I think there were a lot of insights that you shared this morning. That was Dr. Malathi Nungsari, Assistant Professor of Economics at the Asia School of Business and a research affiliate at MIT Sloan School of Management, talking to us about the state of unemployment in the country, especially pertaining to graduate unemployment.
Yeah, I think underemployment is that big issue, right? And it's a structural problem. So she mentioned about retraining. But another thing to also look into is the Employment Insurance Scheme, EIS, whether that can be, you know, how can that be improved in order to, you know, encourage more people to, you know, reinvest in their training and perhaps more training subsidies as well. Singapore, for example, is quite a model in this, in encouraging people to just take ownership of their retraining.
Yeah, and you know, when we talk about this as well, there is this, in the spirit of International Youth Day, there is a lot of youth unemployment as well, right? And this is something that's also been talked about a lot. It's in the double digits. It's something that's probably been exacerbated by the pandemic. There's going to be economic scarring from that on top of the current pandemic as well.
I agree. And I want to point out that Malathi spoke about the different measures that the government can take, but we need to remember that these can't be done in isolation. You can't just do one policy measure and then ignore the rest. No, they all have to be taken in tandem in order to get a complete picture and to help you know, raise employment further. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.